Welcome to another episode of Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I am doing pretty good. Thank God it's Friday. I've had a very long work week, so.
Yeah.
How about yourself, sir?
Well, I'm doing well. It's always good to come towards the Friday, the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And just get some relaxation in. I got the sports teams doing well, so that's always fun. And speaking of sports, check out my hockey podcast with Travis. The name is now, what the hell is it called? Leafs Lounge, the hockey podcast. There it is. There's so many podcasts where we're talking about, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs. So if you're interested in that, go listen to that. And then and so we'll see what else the weekend brings and go from there. But obviously new episodes of Batwoman and Supergirl and all that stuff. So that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're going to do this week is a very simple review, which is the Watchmen premiere. We're going to talk about it. Before we do that, we have a couple of brief bits of news, Ryan. The first of which revolves around Aquaman 2. Jason Momoa, I guess, was getting a little bit antsy with his stepdaughter getting all the news being Catwoman. So he had to drop some Aquaman news just to say, hey, I'm still here.
You're not confirmed. The only one in this family doing superhero movies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking of that. I imagine Christmas morning, Aquaman and Catwoman are going to be having, you know, Christmas dinner or Christmas lunch together, whatever they do. I don't even know if they celebrate Christmas, but if they do, they'll be doing it together. But anyway, Jason Momoa confirmed that that filming on Aquaman 2 is going to begin in 2020. He told Esquire that he came in with a big pitch and the whole thing was mapped out and Warner Brothers loved it. So what do you make of the 2020 filming start date? And also, what do you make of the idea that they're at least going with or all of or part of Jason Momoa's pitch?
I mean, I think he's earned it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's outside of Aquaman. He's, you know, proven himself to be a, you know, fantastic actor on, you know, in other movies and also in TV, you know, all these other different TV shows and whatnot that he's done. And with a billion-dollar film under his belt,
yeah.
I'm sure this is something he worked on with James Wan.
Yeah, I'm sure they had conversations for sure.
Yeah, but you know,
I don't think he just went home one day and said, "You know what? This is what I want to do for Aquaman 2," and they're like, "Sure."
No. but it is nice that, you know, and this is something that I hope is the case across the board with a lot of actors when it comes to these movies. Is
maybe not Ezra Miller.
And we know that Cavill tried and that didn't go as well as we hoped.
Basically, if you make $1 billion, if your film makes $1 billion, you have a little bit of creative say so. How about that?
We say that, unfortunately, but you know, you get so emotionally invested in these, you know, characters. I mean, we say that as fans who see these characters, you know, for 2 hours on the big screen every once in a while, but these are people that spend years of their lives every day, you know, focused on them. So, yeah, I'm glad that he has some clout with that. As for shooting next year, that's a little surprising, only because I thought that a release date was, I thought they said, like, December 2022. And I don't know when. He didn't specify when exactly.
He didn't say when. But
I only say that because, how do I want to word it?
I don't know.
I just don't want one of the things
You're concerned about something. What is it?
Yeah, no, it's the fact that they've been I know what I want to say. It's just hard to get out.
Hold on, I'm gonna pull a journal. Speak.
Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah, what
this
about
film, it? This film was filming in spring and summer of 2018.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be coming out until June of 2020 now. Yeah. I just don't want there to be that big of a delay.
Yeah, but with Aquaman, they kind of need it kind of justifies itself because of all the special effects.
Yeah, but that was still only a year. And that wasn't 2 years, though.
Yeah. But maybe that's the arrangement they made with James Wan, right? I'll come back if you...
I mean, I know he's working on something right now, so that's... Didn't he just start filming, like,
yeah.
something?
So yeah, so I'm sure... Got,
yeah. So it is probably going to be, like, a situation similar to, like, with James Gunn, currently. You know, he's got his commitments to both Marvel and DC. He's going to do Suicide Squad first, and then probably want to take a couple weeks off, at least, and then... start working on Guardians 3.
Yeah.
So maybe like the more I think about it, the more, you know, probably starting later next year.
Yeah.
Also, when is this Trench movie supposed to come out?
I'm not sure.
I thought when that was originally announced, like one of the producers of Aquaman said that they kind of intended for that to come out before Aquaman 2.
Right.
If it even happens anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie that it's coming, spinning off of, made $1 billion. So the chances of it happening, and look, Joker helps that along, right? Because of the money it's making. And, you know, if the Trench can cost cheap, like a horror movie.
Like I think you could do a Trench movie for probably less than what Joker cost. Because I think you could do a Trench movie, and I remember saying this when we were talking, you know, earlier this year when we were talking about the spinoff, was you don't need it to be about thousands of Trench creatures, but like scientists or a fishing community, you know, come across the bodies of one, two, or three of these things, and they're let loose on the town, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's
it's like Finding Nemo, the horror edition. I'd watch that.
There will be no Disney park theme rides based on this one.
No. We're going to scar your kids with this one. Just wait till you see the ride. But but yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's still on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll wait and see. But mm-hmm. I mean, they could theoretically film that in 2020, get it out for 2021, and then boom, Aquaman. In 2022.
Hell, make that the next Black Label film. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to handle the Black Label.
Nah. I hope we get some news with today. Joker officially becoming the highest rated, the highest grossing R-rated
movie
of all time worldwide. I you know, just beating Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
I really hope we get more Black
Label. I think it's a foreground conclusion at this point.
I know. I just hope that it's soon. I'm an impatient son of a bitch. I don't want to wait too long.
Yeah. It's, I think we all want things yesterday. Like, I want Matt Reeves' Batman movie yesterday, but unfortunately...
I want a confirmed Superman trilogy, like last
episode. Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I wanted that the minute I left the theater. After Man of Steel, but they didn't give it to me. They gave us what they gave us. But I'm not going to go there again.
You can interpret that however you want.
Right, exactly. Do what you will with that. But they are giving us another movie, Ryan, and that is Black Adam, or Black Me, as I like to call it. Because my name's Adam, and that's why I came up with that. Not very original or hard to do, but there it is. But anyway, The Rock, you know, Dwayne Johnson himself, who has been lined up to play Black Adam since, talks of this thing?
I want to say 2009. I want to say like 2013, 2014.
Yeah, that's when he was officially.
Right
around 09. So it's been a long time for this movie. And so he apparently there was a fan of his who loves the idea of him playing Black Adam. So he came up with a sculpture of The Rock as Black Adam. And isn't it funny how the sculpture came together faster than the actual Black Adam film? But I digress. Anyway, watch how fast the Flash one comes together.
Make a Flash statue, please.
Yeah, somebody, and then it'll happen before the movie. But anyway, The Rock said that wasn't a wrestling pun, but there it is. that filming for the Shazam spinoff will commence in July of 2020.
Ooh, birth month.
Yeah, mine too. Because we're cool though, you and I. So yeah, that's our birthday present from The Rock. So
We see this not all the time, but occasionally from both sides of the aisle, that actors are cast for roles long before a script. A director, a writer has been chosen.
Yeah.
I mean, Brie Larson was announced as Captain Marvel almost like a full two, three, almost feels like maybe 4 years before the movie even came out.
Well, I think I've aged 4 years listening to people complain about her as Captain Marvel. That's probably what it is.
To which you can shut the fuck up. tough. Made $1 billion. Shut up.
Exactly.
The Rock being cast as Black Adam 8 years ago, almost. Has it been 8 years? No, it's been six, seven, maybe?
2014 to 19 is five and a half,
five,
six.
Five, yeah.
We're approaching six.
I think that's the most egregious example of, hey, we really want this guy to be this particular character. We have no idea where we're going to fit him in. But damn it, we're going to have him be a part of it somehow.
Well, they had to get him. With his schedule, they had to get him. Like, they had to sign him. Otherwise.
I'm just glad that we're getting some traction on this movie, finally.
Yeah.
Because while I'll be interested to see how they do this character solo.
Yeah.
I think movies like Venom and Joker have shown that you can do the villains without the hero involved.
Right.
I mean, Venom was a little bit easier because that character has become an anti-hero over the years. Mm. And Joker's an entirely different animal than that. Yeah. But still, it worked well without having Batman in it.
Right, yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. So that just means that, if we get traction on this film, when we finally start working on it, then that just brings us closer to Zachary Levi and Dwayne Johnson fighting each other.
Yeah.
And let's face it, at the end of the day, that's what we all want.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So yeah, I'm excited by this. Bring on July 2020. Hopefully we'll hear some casting announcements soon.
Mm-hmm. And, does it even have a director attached?
It does. Wame Coletzera, who directed the shark movie with Blake Lively.
The name escapes me, but I've seen
it. But you know which one.
And I liked it. Yeah, yeah. She was
in a shark movie, which means Blake Lively is in a bikini. Of course I like that movie. The script is irrelevant. But that was actually a pretty decent movie.
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, I saw it.
But he also did a bunch of those Liam Neeson action movies.
Taken? Or just the other ones?
No, the other ones. And he's also done Jungle Cruise with The Rock that's coming out.
Stop it, really?
Yeah.
All right, so they're just going to be moving on from one project to the next together. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, just fine. That's good.
Apparently, Wame Coletzera smelt what The Rock was cooking, and he liked it.
My goodness.
Maybe those pancakes. Who knows? So there we go. July of 2020.
Okay.
to get excited and hope for more news the coming months as we approach July.
Well, now that I think about it, this is also the movie that has rumored of, like, the Hawks appearing in it.
Well, at least Hawkman, for sure.
Yeah, Hawkman, yeah.
And
which that would be an interesting
Adam
place.
Smasher and Star-Lord.
So this Black Adam is going to be Black Adam versus the JSA movie?
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, and
it's kind of like the backdoor pilot movie to a JSA movie.
True.
And imagine they ended up doing a JSA movie one day and it made more than Justice League. That'd be pretty. Well, I mean, we live
in. I got nothing against the JSA, but I'm more of a Justice League.
Oh, me too. But I like the JSA, though. I like them, so. Yeah. Hey, another team movie while we wait for the Justice League reboot. I'm down for it.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
But, yeah, so we'll see what happens news-wise as the months go on.
Okay.
That being said, let's get on to the main topic, shall we?
Oh, we also had Wonder Woman news.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah. Two little pieces of Wonder Woman news. First was that at the... Well, let me quickly bring it up so I don't forget. The, it's some Brazilian Comic-Con that'll be in December. Mm. The... Comic-Con experience in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Right.
CCXP.
Yes.
The Wonder Woman panel for that show will be on December 8th. And it's pretty damn good likelihood that that's where we'll finally get our first teaser trailer for Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that amazing how Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot both said that marketing would ramp up in December, and lo and behold, that's exactly what's happening. I mean, it's almost like the internet freaked out that there was no marketing for Wonder Woman for no reason.
Just like the internet freaked out that there was no marketing for Birds of Prey, and now we're...
And they're going too for CCX. Mm-hmm. So two of my Earthwives will be in the same place.
I mean, I've been impatient ever since I saw the leaked screenshots from the stuff that was shown last year at San Diego Comic-Con of Wonder Woman kicking ass in a mall. But that's because I'm just an impatient son of a bitch.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, that would be a wrestling name if you had like that'd be it. But yeah, so I mean, both of those movies are gonna probably have trailers then.
Probably, yeah, because it'll be about the 2 month mark since we've gotten the first Birds of Prey trailer. Yeah. So that's
And we
I didn't even think about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have the worst kept secret in Hollywood regarding Wonder Woman is finally confirmed, right?
Yeah, in a vein similar to when Benedict Cumberbatch was cast in Star Trek Into Darkness, and the studio tried to play it off. Oh, he's playing this character called John Harrison, and a lot of us in fandom, me included, were watching those trailers in 2013, being like, "No, Paramount, we see what you're doing. He is Khan."
Yeah.
I mean, it's been rumored for nearly a year that Pedro Pascal was cast as Maxwell Lord in the Wonder Woman sequel. And with the simple... with Patty Jenkins just simply tweeting out a comic panel of Maxwell Lord and tagging Pedro in it on Twitter, I mean, that's... Did she say exactly Pedro Pascal is Maxwell Lord in the Wonder Woman sequel? No, but I think that...
No, but if you need it more spelled out more than that, I mean, you need to go back to school.
I don't know how else we can dumb it down for you.
You need to go back to school. That's exactly. What I need to do, yeah.
I mean, Maxwell Lord has been one of... I remember him from the first season of Supergirl. While I liked what they did with what they were given, he kind of just came off as
Lex Luthor with hair.
Lex Luthor light. With Lex Luthor with hair, yeah. I'm not that familiar with Maxwell Lord as a character.
Sure.
I know him obviously from Supergirl season one, and also with him being the main antagonist of the unproduced George Miller Justice League Mortal film,
yeah,
which would have had Maxwell Lord, if I'm remembering this correctly.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Where he had Superman under some kind of mind control.
Yes.
And in order to free Superman, Wonder Woman had to snap his neck.
Yeah. And
do you think that, given what happened in Man of Steel, that we're going to go down that route again with Maxwell and the Wonder Woman sequel? Do you think that it's going to have to come to that?
I'm going to say that they are on the side of caution and say no.
I agree. Given how the internet exploded in June of 2013 when Superman snapped Zod's neck, I don't see them doing the same thing both again and also in the aftermath of what happened there. Because there are still people on Twitter and on social media that bitch about that 6 years later.
Oh, I don't think that's ever going to stop.
No. I mean, what I kind of find a little funny is that sometimes when, I have some free time, I will go back to around that time and listen to podcasts of people I like to, hear their in the moment back then thoughts on Man of Steel. And it's kind of cute that a couple of them were like, oh, we're going to be complaining about, the ending of Man of Steel for the next 6 months. Yeah, well, I wish it only lasted 6 months.
Yeah, unfortunately, that didn't happen.
No, it's been 6 years.
But I think that's it, right? In terms of news?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so
unless something breaks while we're recording tonight.
Yeah, and we actually catch it in time, which is probably...
Which I'm checking right now, just in case.
Oh,
the composer for Batman.
Got oh, yeah, we should have mentioned it.
I can't pronounce his
name. Michael Giacchino.
Michael Giacchino. He does the scores for the MCU Spider-Man films.
Hmm. And he's done the new Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done both Incredible movies.
He
did the Planet of the Apes.
The Planet of the Apes. And also the first original Cloverfield movie.
Right.
Now that one did not have a musical score in the film, but that's because of how the movie was, being a found footage thing. But there was during the eight, nine minutes of credits, he did a piece that is called Roar.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful, that this whole nine minute long suite at the end of Cloverfield is a beautiful homage to original Godzilla composer Akira Ifukube.
Uh-huh.
And so I mean, I have some, I've been kind of a little public with my issues on the MCU Spidey movies, but those scores for Homecoming and Far From Home...
Oh, the scores aren't a problem at all.
They are some of the best things about those movies.
Yeah.
And what I also kind of find a little exciting about this announcement is he has already written and composed and recorded the main theme for the Batman before they've even started filming, so that Matt Reeves can use this piece of music as inspiration.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Which means that the new Batman theme exists somewhere in the world.
And I wish it would just drop into my Google Drive. You know, just...
please, yes, leak onto YouTube, something, even a 20-minute clip, a 20-second clip. You know, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael, you're Italian, and you're of Italian descent. I'm of Italian descent. Hook a pie on up. What's going on? Come on, let's talk about this
thing going here. You know what? I'm greedy. Just share it with the two of us. I will not share it with anyone else. I just want to be greedy and listen to it first. That's all.
Sorry, Steven. He just threw you under the bus. It's not my decision. It's Ryan's doing the negotiating on this one, so.
I'm going to be a better negotiator than Henry Cavill. Okay.
Well, I mean, that doesn't take much. All things are a little common sense. yeah.
Either you give me complete creative control over the score or I walk, okay?
And Warner Brothers like, you're not even involved. See ya. Oh, boy.
I think that's it for news.
Yeah, I think even if it wasn't, just stop it there. So let's get right into the main piece of news, which is we're going to talk Watchmen, the first episode, pilot. I'll start us off, if you don't mind, Ryan.
Sure.
I was absolutely enthralled by this episode. It's a new story that is basically a sequel to the comic. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, it has a lot of, you know, its roots are clearly in the comic, in the sense that, much like the comic does, a comic in a comic. Well, the show does a show within a show.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, it's basically like a almost the equivalent of a CNN kind of documentary.
Yeah.
About the era, about the Minutemen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, much like the comic did, they blend real events with a fictionalized history. So you have. Mm-hmm. The stuff at the beginning,
Now, here's my question to you as a Canadian, before we get into this. As a Canadian, were you ever taught about the 1920s Tulsa bombings and massacres? Was that taught in
Canada? I think there is a mention, like a brief kind of mention of it. But it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anything extensive, or you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't covered as much as other incidents, or you know, or like with the world wars or stuff like that.
I can understand for like the international audience. Something that has come to light over the last week since the episode aired is that not a lot of Americans even knew that this was real.
Wow.
I mean, I remember being taught that, but I also took a couple of courses in Black history during college. So I was well aware of this before it even started, but it was a little weird coming onto Twitter Monday and Tuesday and there being headline articles about, you know, thousands of people who, you know, had seen, or just a lot of people who had seen Watchmen premiere. And did not know that the opening was based off of an actual historical event. That was shocking.
That's insanity.
Yes.
That's interesting. It's crazy, but interesting. Again, I like the fact that they followed the comic in those. Mm-hmm. Two avenues, paid respect to the comic in those two avenues. The idea that The limit on term for a president, you know, is abolished. I think that was set up in the original Watchmen, because Nixon. Yeah.
Nixon, by the time of the original, in both the original graphic novel and in the movie, Nixon is in the middle of, I think, his fourth term.
Okay. As president. Yeah. And again, it's expanded upon here, but now Robert Redford has been the president for 30 years, they said?
Yes.
I mean, that too is in keeping with the comic, but I think it's very appropriate nowadays, since didn't the guy in the White House now mention something about he wished that there was no term limit?
About a year ago, our lovely little Cheeto in chief complimented China's president on his prison for life status and thought that was a good idea, because we know that this guy wants to be in power for as long as possible.
Yeah, so I think it's very apropos, you know, for today's time.
Yeah, but the thing is, I would rather Robert Redford be our president than.
I mean, there's so many good candidates that would be better than what you guys have now. But this is not a political podcast. So we'll just. The lint on my sock would be better. But anyway. It could run because it's been on Canadian soil, so I guess it was born here, so out of contention. Yeah, that seems very apropos, especially, you know, now. It's funny how Watchmen's themes are very apropos now. It's alarming that they are, given, you know, what that means, but they are. What did you make of the idea that the white supremacists had taken up Rorschach's mantra and philosophy and perverted it for their own ideologies?
And this is where I'm going to get to my unpopular opinion about the Watchmen. I do not like Rorschach. I've never understood why, both for the original graphic novel, for the movie, people cling to that character as like the best, you know, the ideal hero or something. It's like the Rorschach from like when the Watchmen team started. Maybe he was a good guy, and I can't fault him for going through some really traumatic crap when he went to go to the pedophile's house to save the young girl, you know, in his backstory, and all the crap that happened that night. But knowing who the character of Rorschach is by the time the graphic novel starts, and seeing that a white supremacist terrorist group, which, first off, I just want to quickly say, we know this is a fictional world, because white nationalist terrorists, or just white nationalists, are labeled by the government as a terrorist group. Our current president sympathizes.
Yeah, they're good people on both sides, Ryan. Remember that.
Not political. Yeah, we're talking about political super.
It's part of Watchmen, right? It's part of it.
It's like, oh, okay, definitely. You know, I'd forgotten that Watchmen was in a fantasy world because white nationalists were treated as terrorists. I forgot. Sorry. Anyway, we just lost it.
But you know what? What did you think? What did you make of?
It does not surprise me, because the character of Rorschach is a hardcore right winger by the time the graphic novel, the movie, the original story. I'll just kind of lump the graphic novel and the movie into the original story. By the time the original story starts off, he is a hardcore, cynical, right wing leaning individual. I do not believe that Rorschach would align himself with these characters, with the 7th Cavalry. I think he would definitely beat the ever-loving crap out of them. But there's not... How do I describe it? He wouldn't align himself with them, but there's not that many steps that one can jump to.
Sure.
To make the connection between their viewpoints.
Sure.
And their ideology to Rorschach's.
Yeah.
So.
And also, that organization, that group, gives reasoning in the pilot for why the cops wear masks as well, and basically, what was it called? The white.
It's only referred to as the White Knight. They don't really get into it, but I'm assuming that it's.
Well, it's the last terrorist attack that they perpetrated.
Hello?
Yeah, you all right? What happened there?
Yeah, I accidentally unplugged the mic.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. We're good.
Oops. Okay. Yes, the last major attack that the 7th Cavalry perpetrated, and it sounds like, from what I've gathered, that it was like they went to the homes and private residences of police officers and tried to murder them. Why? We don't know. Yet. We don't know yet. But, and I'm wondering if this whole cops wearing the masks, I'm wondering if that's a nationwide thing or if it's just for Tulsa.
That is a good question.
Because we don't really get to, outside of one scene, and we'll get to it, outside of one scene, we stay entirely Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Speaking of the idea that the cops have masks, I really liked all three of the main ones that they showed us. Specifically, the guy that could sort of do a lie detector test.
Looking Glass. That's his.
Mask
name. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's. I guess that's the ability that the mask gives him, or somehow.
Possibly.
Did it really explain how that worked? But
no. But also at the same time, neither version of the original story really explained how Rorschach's mask worked.
Yeah, that's true.
I can just like. I don't know if it's something about the mask itself or if the mask allows him to kind of... Like, the mask acts like a one-way mirror.
Yeah.
So that... what's his name? He was almost the leader in The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, Tim Blake Nelson?
Yes, Tim Blake Nelson. I think it's just a skill set he has to be able to...
Yeah.
Like a human lie detector, but the mask kind of protects his identity. That's what I'm. That's what I assume.
Yeah. And then. What I liked about a guy like that is that they don't fit your traditional hero mold, right? He's like a Joe, an everyday Joe. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just a regular,
He's not someone. He wears a mask and he has a masked name, but I don't think we're going to see him out on the front lines.
Oh, definitely.
He's someone that's going to stay back and work.
Right.
Technical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I really liked, what was her name?
Sister Knight. I can't remember the character name, but Sister Knight is.
Yeah, I liked
Regina,
her.
Yeah, Regina King. Oh, yeah. She, the standout, the MVP.
what a great character. Like, everything from when she went, because at first I'm like, from watching the promotional materials, that she is who she is. But just watching the premiere, the beginning of that episode before you, before the quote unquote reveal, you could assume that she's not anybody heroic or superheroic or what have you. So it's done really well, showing, like I said, showing the more homely, if you will, side of her.
Yeah.
To set it up. And then when she goes and gets her, when she gears up, right? Or when she has her suit up moment. Did you get like a combination of like Batgirl from Batman 66 and the Green Hornet? Because I did. And I don't know if that was intentional, but I loved it. And then it's funny because just as they show the homely side of her, you then see the absolute badass of Sister Knight when she interrogates the white supremacist. She takes him into the room and she literally, I don't know what she does, beats him to a bloody pulp or...
I don't think she kills him, but I think she does.
No, but she drained him of half, at least half of his blood.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal.
But it's behind closed doors, so you really don't.
But you just hear it, and I'm giggling the whole time.
Because... Oh yeah, because when you know, excessive violence can sometimes be queasy, but when it's happening to a white sympathizer or a Nazi,
Nazis, hashtag Nazis should get punched.
Yeah, so. I agree. But now, let me ask you, here's a couple of questions, and this will take us into the next, you know. So with the kid at the beginning from the Tulsa bombings, right? I took it that he was... by the end of the party, he was the old man in the wheelchair.
That's what I'm assuming as well.
Okay, so I'm not...
And I'm not saying this as someone who, like, knows what's coming up next. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
No. No, because he says he's 100 and some odd years old, right?
So which he would have to be. Yeah.
Yeah, that would track.
And he does ask her... earlier in the episode when she's going to her quote-unquote bakery, the Sister Knight cave.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's outside the shop and he asks her, do you think I could carry 200 pounds? And I didn't think much of it at first, on first view.
I said, what's this old fart talking about now?
Well, that's weird. Maybe he's just destined for a job. And then you see the end of the episode, it's like, oh, crap.
Now, before we get there, do you think she's related to... Do you think he's somehow related, like an ancestor of hers?
That wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, because that's what I thought.
Simply because of the fact that... All right. Simply because of the fact that, A... We spent a good, how long was it? 6, 7, 8 minutes, the opening of the episode, dealing with the...
That's about right, yeah.
That, yeah, you can interpret it as, well, they were showing us the horrific, graphic nature of this tragedy to then parallel what's going on in present-day Watchmen universe Tulsa.
Yeah.
But... I don't think they would have dedicated that much time to a seemingly, in the span of Watchmen lore, a seemingly minute and small incident, unless it had some repercussions for later. And also, another thing that comes to mind is, and it's weird and it's a little tangential, and I probably will come off as a little crazy about it, but do you remember in the original story, when Manhattan is going on about to Silk Spectre about all the randomness in life that occurred and the actions people took that resulted in her being here.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if on some level that is going to be applied to Sister Night.
That's a good pull. It's a very good pull.
That, yeah, this old guy in the wheelchair may be a horrible monster and murderer, but...
Well, now, wait just a minute. We don't know.
But, yeah. No, we don't know. I'm saying maybe. He may be the guy who killed, you know, one of the characters in this episode and hung him by a tree.
All right, well, let's go. Since he went there, let's go there. So we got the sheriff, played by... Mm-hmm. What is it, Jeff? No.
Don Johnson, I believe.
Don, I was going to say Jeff Bridges. Don Johnson. Don't ask me why Jeff Bridges is coming to my head. But anyway. Don Johnson, yeah. Wasn't he Miami Vice?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I know my 80s television. but I thought the way they were setting it up and the way he had access to the Night Owl ship, I thought they were going to reveal that he was somehow Dan.
Ooh, that would have been cool. Which, by the way, just, I love seeing the Night Owl ship. I just guys got quickly.
Oh, that looked great.
Yes. Oh.
I don't know what their budget is, but damn it, that looked good.
Oh, I was grinning ear to ear seeing the Night Owl ship in that one scene. But yes, continue.
So I thought he was going to be revealed as you know, Night Owl 2 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the case because, like, by the end of the episode, he gets strung up on a tree by supposedly the guy in the wheelchair. Now, they lingered on when he was leaving to go visit the other cop in the hospital. They lingered on a picture of him when he was a boy. Now, was he standing next to a white sympathizer? Because if he was, that would explain why the guy supposedly hung him up to the tree.
I mean, maybe. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't know.
Because they lingered on that for a long time, and I think it doesn't have significance.
Because I assumed that the younger, like the kid in the picture, was the sheriff when he was younger. But I have no idea who that guy was. I mean, and I've watched the episode twice.
Because think about it. Why would anybody, whether it's the old man or not, hang him up in that fashion? You know, other than to say, well, look, how's this feel? You know, turnabout's fair play kind of thing, you know? So that's why the fact that they lingered on the picture and the way he died kind of made me think that.
If that is true, do you think that the sheriff was...
Corrupt?
Corrupt, a double agent that he was actually working with the 7th Cavalry?
I could see that, yeah.
And I think I want to believe in the good of people, and I just want to believe it's just coincidental that it's the case.
And I think that's going to be revealed.
You think he's going to have connections?
Yeah.
To the okay.
Yeah.
Possibly.
But and then we had I saved him for last, but we have the first scenes of Jeremy Irons, the George Lazenby of Alfred's, as Ozymandias.
But Adam, they haven't confirmed it. He's only listed as Lord of Country Manor. This is the other worst kept secret.
Yeah, I mean, really, again. If the color scheme of the cake didn't clue you in,
and the way he talks,
yeah. Have you read Watchmen? Is my
exactly yeah. And we've seen him in promos, like doing like a meditation pose that Adrian Veidt did in several times throughout the original story. DC is not really great with trying to keep secrets like this.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
I mean, that's who he is. Who are we beating around the bush?
I mean, come on. Even when he was first announced, it was kind of like, so is he going to be like an older Ozymandias? Because I could see an older Ozymandias.
But, oh, it's perfect. It's perfect. Yeah. It's like, that's perfect casting. And he kind of looks like the guy that played him in...
Yeah, he does look like an older Matthew Good.
Yeah.
From the movie, yeah.
That's who it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he does talk. Like with his cadence,
yeah, it's true. Yeah, I agree. But what
are your thoughts on the servants?
Well, I think they're weird, to be honest. First of all,
do you think that they might be genetic clones? Because Ozymandias, with his cat,
he's one screwed up SOB. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think he made weird?
There could be some kind of clones or altered humans or robots even. Who knows? All I know is he was sitting around naked and I'm like, all right, hold on a second. I get this is HBO, but I have no desire to see Jeremy Irons naked.
They couldn't really make a cake all that well. It's like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
I want answers. I'm in.
Well, she was too busy rubbing his everything.
To go to my newly christened wrestling name, I'm an impatient SOB.
Yeah. We're gonna have you guest when we do a retro episode of the wrestling show. We'll have you guest there just so we can say the name. Well, you watch older wrestling years ago, right?
Years.
Yeah, like the Undertaker and Hulk Hogan. Come on, good old days. Anyway. But yeah, I was like, okay, this whole rubbing him down while he's naked is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like I said, I had my fill of seeing junk in this franchise with when I went to see the movie in IMAX. And oh boy.
Funny you say that because I watched Sunday night after Batwoman. I did watch this with... my fiance Joe, and after it had aired, and this is someone who had seen the movie a couple times, never read the graphic novel, only seen the movie once or twice, and even that had been a long time. So he's like, so I have questions, as he leaned over afterwards, but one of the comments he made to me was, I am a little disappointed in the lack of big blue glowing penis.
Yeah, well, see, I'm glad you appreciate it, but let me tell you, like, I remember when we got tickets to that movie, I had read the book years before the movie. So, your mind kind of forgets things.
Yeah.
So my buddy's like, okay, well, we got things. You want to go IMAX? I'm like, yeah, sure. It'll look great in IMAX. You know, Zack Snyder is a good visual filmmaker. I still think that, but I thought that again, also back then. But I still think that now, by the way. But anyway, this will look really good in IMAX. Yeah, it's a great idea, right? And so... We got there a little late, so we had to sit, a little bit closer to the screen, which is never fun. So I'm reclined in the seat because I don't want to hurt my neck. And I'm looking up, and I think with the first frame of the movie, first couple frames of the movie, there's a big dong, blue dong in my face. And I'm like, wow, I didn't sign up for this, but I didn't think I was going to be this close.
Come on, they had him wear pants in the comics.
Right. I mean,
you at least got to be happy, though.
Oh, no, I was happy later on.
That they gave him pants when he's, the size of Godzilla in Vietnam.
Thank God. That would have been some kind of freaky fetish kind of video that I just don't want to be a part of.
It became a freaky fetish video when, three of him are... manhandling, Laurie while he's working in the
But I'm like, I gotta give him props for multitasking. I mean,
I wish I could do that. I wish I could just like send out copies of myself to go do errands and go to work while
I'd be doing the fun part. Everybody, all the rest of the copies of me would be doing the boring shit that I don't want to do. But
yeah, but this is Dr. Manhattan. Working on a science experiment is probably his fun shit.
That's the difference between me and Dr. Manhattan. I would enjoy playing around with Laurie, and he does the science crap.
Okay, but speaking of Dr. Manhattan going to for this pilot episode, it was cool to see like the 15 seconds of like a live feed of Manhattan just playing around on Mars, making a sandcastle because I guess he's bored now. But I do like that we keep still it's been almost 40 years since the events of the original story, and we're still keeping tabs on this. This isn't just government stuff, this is like live broadcast to the whole world, so that we can all keep an eye on him.
But how boring must the rest of humanity be to him that he's just on the moon doing
building a sandcastle and then destroying it?
La la la. Those people are so stupid. I'm not even
going to go. Why not go back? Because that the glass castle, the clockwork castle, that is. Make another one of those.
Instead of that seems like it would take some time.
That looks fun.
Or do whatever you got to do to make Doomsday Clock happen in live action. I'd get behind that.
I saw someone on Twitter posted a picture of what the first issue for Doomsday Clock, and I saw down in the bottom corner, January 2018. I was like, holy crap, and this story is still not over.
Oh, yeah, but see, okay, now, I'm going to pat myself on the back here, because I said, okay, wait, hold on a second. Jeff Johns, he's writing and directing for an executive producing Stargirl. Mm-hmm. He's supposedly writing Green Lantern Corps, right?
Mm-hmm. We know he's not working on the Batman movie anymore.
Right, yeah. He's doing Shazam. He's the book. He's doing
another one that, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing all these different things. I said, there's no way this thing is going to be out on time. And sure enough, by issue 3, there was delay. So I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to wait till all 12 issues and then sit down and read them in one fell swoop. And that's what I'm doing.
That's why I have to say, I never bothered, even getting back into DC, I never bothered to subscribe to the individual issues. Because I went out, I bought the part one hardcover that they just released for Doomsday Clock. I'll wait, I'll get part two.
So I haven't read a lick of it, and I'm okay with that, because eventually when I do, I'll be done.
I have listened to an episode of one of my favorite podcasters, and he reviewed, forgot which issue it was supposed to be, but it was very Manhattan-centric looking throughout the multiverse history of Superman. And I'll just say that I kind of got a little queasy feeling in my stomach.
Oh, okay.
For two reasons. I'll just kind of briefly mention them. I don't want to get into it too much. One, I think Johns is trying to overcomplicate the multiverse. Uh-huh. And at least this might... I'll read it and form my own opinion. But the way that this guy, podcaster, was talking about it, where it was trying to, well, I guess there's a part in this issue where Manhattan is looking at all the different iterations of Superman that have existed, comics-wise, in the multiverse. But when he gets, and he says something like, I don't understand these people, I don't understand him. But then he gets to the New 52 Superman and is like, this one I understand. Or something like that. And it's like, are we still trying? Because I'm guessing Doomsday Clock is supposed to have Manhattan as the bad guy. And that he's so alienated from humanity that the only Superman he identifies with is the one that fandom has beaten to a dead horse. Trash this version of the character so much that DC went out of their way to freaking kill him just to make people happy.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, come on. Stop it with this.
Maybe there'll be some empathy from Johns to that character. Because he had a hand in informing that character, right? With,
mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, again, this is also the interpretation of a podcaster who I love and respect, but he really freaking hates the New 52 Superman, so maybe he went into it with a biased opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, if you know me, I'm the exact opposite. But so I'll read it for myself.
Yeah.
But it still kind of gave me a little bit of a queasy feeling that I wasn't going to. Because are you trying to say that the only, like I said, the only version of Superman that a villainous, somewhat villainous take on Dr. Manhattan, the only kind of Superman he appreciates, is the one that everyone makes jokes about, that he was brash and a thug?
I think maybe it's more because of the way society treated him when they first found out about him.
Maybe.
That's what I think it is.
Maybe. I'm willing to go with you. Hopefully I'll read it that way.
At the end of the day, I think you and I and maybe Steven will have to do an episode on the New 52 Superman.
Sure.
At some point. Yes. But overall, I'm getting back to Watchmen. I love what they set up. You know, and you even see the fallout of the squid, the big giant squid monster.
Which answers the question of, is this a sequel to the movie or to the comic book? And that was an interesting comment that.
Well, if you ask Bryan Singer, it's a requel. It could be both. Who knows?
A requel. Oh my god. That was kind of a funny moment when Joe leaned over to me and was like, what is up with the squid? And I was like, okay, now I gotta tell you about the biggest difference between the movie and the book.
Oh, he doesn't know?
He, like I said, he never read the original graphic novel.
Oh, you gotta let him read the book.
He has seen the movie, but even that, it's been a long time. So he didn't understand the squid, and I had to explain, well, in the original graphic novel, it was a giant Godzilla-sized squid that just appears out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And while I like Snyder's ending, and I think it kind of works for the movie-wise a little bit better, there is a part of me that would have liked to have seen.
Being a monster, a giant monster fan.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that visual of a giant, massive squid just laying and demolished New York City. Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah. Yeah.
But here's the thing. We know that the attack in both the movie and the original graphic novel, that it was staged.
Hmm.
So, you know, and when Looking Glass is interrogating the one white, you know, 7th Cavalry guy, he, you know, asked the question, do you think that interdimensional attacks are hoaxes by the government? So, Vite is still up to something.
Yeah. It's, like I said, I'm not sure where they're going, but I'm in for the ride. I love this episode. Mm-hmm. I love the production values, the production design.
Uh-huh. It felt very well. Score. Do you like
the score? Yeah, the score was great too, yeah. But yeah, and that's the thing. It looked like it was like a good balance of the comic and movie aesthetically. It was both. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's what I loved about it. But I'm all in to get more use out of that Justice League marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see where it goes. It's a fascinating watch.
The only negative I have. Well, there's two negatives. One, why were they so reckless with the owl ship? I hope they can fix that fast, because that was cool to see.
I think they'll fix it. I think
I hope so. And I love that its primary weapon is still, after all these years, is still the flame flower.
Yeah.
I can't speak. That's just, you know, a part of me started, you know, mentally saying, hallelujah.
Yeah. No, it was great. I loved seeing it again.
And also, the only other disappointing thing I could think of is,
because we know that actress Jean Smart is going to be in the show playing an FBI special agent, Blake, but we know it's the older Laurie Silk Spectre.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for that because I want to see what Silk Spectre has been up to.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
And also with her being involved, if she's going to make any mention to what Dan Draper, the Night Owl, what he's been up to.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to him. Is he still around? What's...
Well, the only characters that they've come out and said are going to be involved in this show from the original Watchmen team was Manhattan and Spectre, and obviously we know Ozymandias. But that kind of leaves Dan, you know, the second Night Owl, that leaves him as like the one question mark is what's up with him.
Well, we'll wait and see, but I'm intrigued, and we're gonna continue to do episode reviews. And so I guess we can go ahead and rate it then.
If I had to, out of 10, I'm giving it 9 out of 10. I think this is definitely going to be a game changer when it comes to superhero properties on television.
Yeah.
I may not be able to describe it all that well. Maybe it's the political undertones, the way that they're adapting the material and expanding upon it, the racial messages and themes that they're exploring. But this just feels incredibly different than anything on the Arrowverse, anything that Marvel Netflix did.
Mm-hmm.
It feels different and special.
And anything that DC Universe is doing, too.
Exactly, yes. This just feels like it has, in this overly crowded, and I don't mean that negatively, I like that it's crowded because it gives us choice, in this crowded field of superhero television, from both Marvel, DC, and now with shows like Umbrella Academy and The Boys, where we're getting more, you know, independent stuff, too. That Watchmen has carved out its own niche.
Yeah, I think for me, it captures what the original did. It shakes up the status quo of that shook up the status quo of comics, and this is doing the same for superhero television.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's a great way to put it.
It's the exact same thing. Yeah, so I mean, it just shows you how rich the property is, that it's able to do that across mediums, and that there's still, contrary to Alan Moore's hang-up, there's still a lot of ground to cover with this franchise, and I'm glad they're doing it.
And actually, weirdly enough, this makes me want to go and find the trades from the before Watchmen.
Yes, those were pretty good too.
I never read a single one of those.
Now, definitely read them. Give them a look.
Will do. I'll try and hunt them down soon.
But what was your rating again?
I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 9 as well. I thought it was a great start. It hooked me in right away. And I'll be watching next week.
Absolutely.
So we hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to talk with us further about it, you can. Where can they find you, Ryan?
You can find me on Twitter at TheAmazingRyeGuy.
Yeah, awesome. And if you want to talk to me, you can do that at Adam_LeafsFan. And we'll talk about the Watchmen, the Arrowverse, hockey, wrestling, whatever. whatever else on the podcast comes out of the woodwork. And then also, if you want to go the Facebook route, we have a Tales from the DC Multiverse Facebook page. I'll go there, request admittance to the group. Either Ryan or myself will add you, or Travis, and then we can talk there some more. But that's it for this week. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did recording it, And be here next week as we watch more of The Watchmen. So long, everybody.